Ikema here with you on a beautiful Monday morning with Ben Solak. We are going through all of the divisions in the NFL, going through all of the draft classes from the 2019 NFL draft class. Last week, we did the AFC. We went through all of the AFC divisions. And this week, we have the responsibility of doing the NFC. That's normally how things work.
The Lord's Conference.
which is biblical, actually. So that's very true. And we're starting off with a conference that, or a division, that is near and dear to your heart, Ben. And that is the NFC East. The NFC East not only holds your favorite team, the Philadelphia Eagles, but it also holds the teams that you seem to love to dunk on the most. And I think that all of those things all go into one big package. Let's start with the team that everybody has kind of been dunking on for, since they went on the clock, number six overall on Thursday night to start the 2019 NFL draft. That's the New York Giants. New York Giants have quite, oh man, the reputation with Dave Gettleman as the general manager making the selections in the first round. So here's how all this worked out. Just to recap kind of how the Giants got here. They have the number six overall pick. Because why, Ben? Because they were bad. Okay? That's
important
why they
to
got
remember.
It's really important to remember that the New York Giants were bad. That's how they got the six overall pick. They got the 17th overall pick by doing something that was bad off the field. Trading Odell Beckham Jr. Imagine, could not be me. And then they also had the 30th pick in the draft when they traded back up at the very end of the first round to make three selections. We thought the Oakland Raiders were going to be the only team making three selections in the first round, but the Giants, I guess, wanted to join that party. I'd say the Raiders did a little bit better of a job using their three picks than
Maybe.
The Giants did. So let's start at the top. Daniel Jones.
Listen.
Looks exactly like Eli Manning.
Looks like a cross between Eli Manning and the Pillsbury Doughboy, which Eli Manning already looked like a cross between Peyton and the Pillsbury Doughboys. We have like two generations of Pillsbury Doughboy in here.
And that's like not the direction you want to be going.
No.
Like you want to be going in the other direction. You don't want to be continuing the genes of the Pillsbury Doughboy. You want to do the other one.
He and Josh Allen both have the most moony faces I've ever seen in my entire life. It's just part of being a quarterback, apparently. Yeah, they look like full moons. Just flat and white and round.
Okay. All right. Is that a scouting term? I'm going to start using that as a scouting term. All right. Ben, what do you think about Daniel Jones? Let's just go in a vacuum. Okay. Let's go vacuum first. What you thought of Daniel Jones. I'll give you my thoughts afterwards. But what you thought about him, don't even talk about him as in a guy who went number six overall. Talk to me about just Daniel Jones.
He's not very good.
Okay, great. Now, yeah, we'll go on to the next one because that's all we need. No, I'm just kidding. Keep going.
We have a player who, like, I would have been so interested to hear/see Daniel Jones compared to Lamar Jackson and the systems they ran and what they were asked to do when Lamar came out last year, because there was so much like Lamar came on a pro style offense, da 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 da. When Lamar was like, you know, marrying his drops to his route concepts and he was throwing intermediate crossers. I mean, Daniel Jones was not asked to do requisite amount of post-snap processing for me to feel like he's ready to play in any NFL system this year, which, like, he has some tools. I think his arm is better than he gets credit for. I think he has good mobility. I think his deep ball improved, which it couldn't get worse, so it improved. But the limited work he did, the cookie-cutter offense, I like to call it an if-then offense. Okay, if that guy's there, then throw it over there. And if he's not there, then throw it here.
That's
right?
A good way to say it, yeah.
It's an if-then offense. It's like a dichotomous key. You just make one choice, two paths, boom, and that's it. And there's so little what you would call pro conception work, what you would call pro mental work. And then like, you know, being able to integrate your footwork into that, being able to integrate your drop length, your drop depth, your drop quickness into that, being able to integrate your hitches when you climb in the pocket and you manipulate against pressure into those reads. I mean, he didn't have to do this. He was not asked. Does that mean he can't? No. Does that mean he's a pro ready prospect? It means he's not. He's not pro ready. He didn't do things that 90% of pro systems are going to ask him to do. Now, obviously, we're agnostic of team fit right now. If he goes to a team that is able to work with him on that, then maybe he gives you something in year one. but it's a very limited number of teams. And spoiler alert, he didn't really go to one. So
okay, yeah. Well, I was gonna kind of piggyback off that a little. I didn't really think that. I just didn't see a lot of upside with Daniel Jones right now. So I think that if he's gonna really be worth, because I mean, let's face it. Let's bring in the fact that he was the number six overall pick. Dude's playing this year. Right. I mean, like, there's no doubt about that. You are not a top 10 quarterback pick, and we even saw that with last year. You're not a top 10 quarterback pick, even if you're on a team that's got some guys in front of them that you might want to wait, that whether they have a quarterback already established in front of them, or maybe they're not exactly where they want to be in terms of being a starting NFL quarterback yet, you're going to start in year one. That's just the world that we live in. When you go that high, you're going to start. And even sometimes if you don't go that high, there's going to be push for you to start in year one if things aren't going so well. And so I think that when you look at Daniel Jones, you go, okay, well, he's not ready right now. You know, he needs to kind of get his feet wet and really learn how to deal with NFL speeds and NFL offenses and learn to play on the fly and getting more accurate at an instinctive level, I think, where just it's like, hey, I see this window. I'm taking the chance. I'm making the throw. I'm making it happen. And that's what you got to do a lot in the NFL when you're starting quarterback. And I just don't see that with Daniel Jones. I think you're right. A lot of it, if you're going off script or when that ball's got to travel pretty far down the field, it was never there consistently for me. And I get, you know, there's a little bit of leg mobility there with him. The kid's tough as nails, came back soon after his shoulder surgery. I mean, the David Cutcliffe pedigree to talk about what Joe Marino is kind of has to talk about all the time when people ask him about it. I get all that stuff, but all that stuff is X factor things for already have the other stuff in place. You can't go, hey, he's not accurate deep down the field, but he can run, or hey, he isn't great at decision making. But, you know, he's a tough kid. Like, he's a tough kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are X factors. And I felt like we as in NFL GMs talked ourselves into Daniel Jones' X factors. And we don't realize that you can only use the X factors as a positive when the things that you need to see about a quarterback are already there. Because if not, you're just looking at an incomplete quarterback. And I thought that's what Daniel Jones was.
If and it's so like the first thing we talk about, like, you know, that sort of mentality of looking at a quarterback and looking at even a prospect is so telling. And I love talking about it that way because, like, when the Eagles drafted Clayton Thorson, spoiler alert, I was like, I was on the stream and I said, listen, he's a good athlete. But when the first thing you say about a quarterback is his athleticism, we've got problems because it means you're not talking about the other stuff. Right. Daniel Jones, for the first thing for us to talk about with him to be his coaching is damning. It's completely super damning. Because you're basically saying, listen, you want to know why this guy's good? Because he's a product of somebody else's work. Like, that literally just telling you that he doesn't have natural talent. He's not Daniel Jones is a good pro prospect. He was coached by Dave Cutcliffe. Okay, so then let's give Dave Cutcliffe, like, my cousin Peter, you know, who's 8 years old. Peter's going to be a great pro prospect. Dave Cutcliffe's going to teach him how to throw a football. What are we – and can I talk about this in context of pick six now?
Yes. Yes, you can.
What are we doing? What? And it's even backwards. Like, when it happened at six, that was the most ludicrous thing. But that's not even the most ludicrous thing anymore. What's the most ludicrous thing is that Dave Gettleman, who knows the media gets at him, who knows the media thinks that he's not good at this, who knows that he's the most scrutinized GM in one of the biggest football markets, who is adhering to a style of roster building that most general managers don't use anymore. He knows all this. There's no way he's not self-aware enough to know all this. For him to just say, yeah, no, we were positive that two teams were going to get him before 17. So we would have taken him at 17, but instead we're going to take him at 6. Have you never spoken to the media before? What? Like, firstly, it doesn't even matter if that's true. One media member has to ask one NFL guy who doesn't think that's true. And that NFL guy can just lie because he doesn't like you, Dave, and say, yeah, no one was going to trade up. No one was going to trade up before 6. Nobody was threatening to trade up with the Jets at 3 to go take Daniel frickin' Jones. And because, and then one media member says, actually, that's false. And now everybody thinks you're an idiot. So, like, your media training here is awful.
I already thought he was an idiot.
Everybody thinks you got caught with your pants around your ankles. That's number one. Number two, it doesn't matter who you wanted and when you wanted him and what you're willing to give up and who else was on the board. When you draft a player, what you say is, and I quote, "He was our guy," end quote. It's every GM always gets every player they always wanted in post-draft media. You never, ever, ever, ever admit that there are other eventualities. It's just the
100%.
Gross mismanagement of making the pick and then being unable to defend the pick is unbelievable.
Ben, that was beautiful. Ben, it was beautiful. The rant,
I don't even care. Pick Jarrett Stidham at six. Just say, we evaluated Stidham. We thought he was worth six. We took him at six. F you. I'm the general manager of the New York Giants. The end.
For now. Well, I mean, when he gets fired in 2 years, he won't be anymore. But
and it'll be a sad day for Eagles fans everywhere.
It's true. Let's touch on the rest of their class really quick because we got a lot that we got to get to. I mean, we could do like a whole podcast on just Daniel Jones, I feel like. But we got to kind of rip through this a little bit. Dexter Lawrence was their 17th overall pick. Oh, man. I just – like, what do we – What are we doing here? Like, Dexter Lawrence is a fine football player, right? Pick him in the second round.
Right.
That's
or
like,
pick,
like,
or pick what? The B version of him in the sixth round.
He's a nose tackle.
And you had a good one in Snacks Harrison,
and you traded him. That was the thing. I tweeted this out right when it happened. Dave Gettleman traded the best nose tackle in the NFL for a fifth-round pick, and then drafted a nose tackle at number 17 overall. What happened here?
I have a theory, which is that Dave Gettleman is just anti-player. Like, he's just anti-player as a person. Like, he just doesn't like football players.
And dude, that might be the case. I mean, like, he gave money to Harrison, traded him. Gave money to Odell, traded him. When Saquon wants a new contract, trade him too.
Josh Norman to Carolina. Josh Norman to Carolina, when you are a player who is even remotely aware of and vocal about how good you are, Dave Gettleman tries to get rid of you if he's your general manager. If you are a good player who Gettleman gives if he feels like he has to / does give a big contract to, the moment that you do anything that, like, you know, seems like fun, seems like, you know, outside of the contract you were given, if you get injured so you don't return the contract, he starts trying to move you. I just think he hates paying players money. I think he just wants every player to be a cheap rookie or a veteran deal that he, like, you know, like, found a guy. And he just wants, you know, he just wants to be in complete control of a roster on rookie contracts. Like, I just he doesn't like paying players. Which, as a general manager, if you can't swallow the pill of, like, paying the good players, your team will never be good. The end.
That was a good story. DeAndre Baker goes 30 overall. I mean, I think it's – honestly, I don't know where you were on Baker, but – like 30 is fine if you get the most out of DeAndre Baker. We've just heard kind of whispers that, like, hey, this dude, ironic that we're talking about this here after we followed up with Dave Gettleman not liking football players, like DeAndre Baker's a little bit of a me dude, which you have to be a corner, but we were also told, like, kind of things during the draft process that maybe a little too much. So yeah. 30 is interesting because he's a talented kid and I think he'll get a chance to start and that's fine. But, then they didn't have a pick until the third round. O'Shea Zimenez, Julian Love was after that. Julian Love, I actually like this pick. Oh, wow.
I like what they did at the corner
good
position.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I like what they did at corner with DeAndre Baker, Julian Love. They come back around with Corey Ballantyne late in the sixth round, which
I didn't get to
good
watch
spot.
Him, so I don't really know.
Say that again?
I didn't get to watch him, so I didn't really know about Ballantyne.
Yeah, I mean, he's a height, length, speed, developmental guy. He's good physicality to him. Sixth round is the right spot, in my opinion. And then let's not forget their early third they forfeited because they took Sam Beal in the supplemental draft last year, and I thought that is a little bit rich for Beal, but I get it. And so, really, four corners selected in this draft for James Betcher for that defense. They want to blitz. And so they need corners who can play in the short areas with physicality, hold up those routes for you know, disrupt them for a second and a half, let the rush get there. So I really like that defensive approach. I think going corner heavy, I like that a lot.
To move on to the Cowboys,
yes, sir.
I liked I like Tristan Hill a lot. I really do. And I like this pick specifically for the Cowboys because when I look at Tristan Hill, certainly there is a lot that you need to work on. I think the guy is – and Joe Marino put it perfectly. Dude's a bull in a china shop. Like, that's yep. how Tristan Hill is. But dude can move and has some strength for a guy his size. I mean, like, that was obvious in little flashes where – he would get really pissed off, and you could see him get pissed off in the middle of that defense right on the front line. They'd hike the ball. He'd burst the gap in between a double team and split those dudes and get the quarterback off his spot, or he'd just straight up take up a double team. And you could see some almost like Hulkish to bring a Marvel theme into this because that's all I've been thinking about since I watched Endgame. There's definitely that, like, when this guy gets angry, he's pretty much a monster. And the reason why I like this pick for the Cowboys is not only do I think they have a need like that on the interior, Cowboys were without a first-round pick, right? They've used their first-round pick trading for Amari Cooper. So when they have that pick number 58, they took a swing on a guy who, if developed properly by a really good defensive line coach and Rob Marinelli, this guy could be potentially worth what would have been a first-round pick when it Whoa. Comes to the impact. So that's my thoughts there. I really like that. Now, I'm not saying like that's guaranteed or anything, but I see a really high upside with Tristan Hill. And if you can develop it, you're getting a guy that's going to have some heavy impact on your team, especially from a position that you and I have talked about really coming up with importance on that interior spot. And so that I really like the Tristan Hill pick. I did.
Yeah, see, I'm not as high on Hill as I think that you are just as a player right now. And to me, like objectively, the fact that we have a player who started for multiple years, coaching staff changed, and he was put into a backup role is very interesting to me in terms of why that happens, how do the player responds, how does the coach responds, what about Hill made them want to take him out of a starting role. That's all very curious to me. But right now, like obviously I get that he used to be a starter, but he does play like a situational player in terms of the fact that I think he's very, bull in a china shoppy. He's very aggressive. He doesn't stay, functional within the scheme of a defense, and he doesn't help clear up other players to make plays. Sometimes he's kind of just, like a one-man wrecking crew for better and for worse. And so I think he needs, I also agree. Like I like some things about the player. 58 is too rich for me. 90 is too rich for me for Connor McGovern. 128 is too rich for me for Tony Pollard. These are players I don't mind. I like them. I find them interesting. Honestly, Pollard at 128 is probably okay. Like fourth round's a little much, but it's the fourth round.
If you
right.
flip, if you flipped where Pollard and Mike Weber went, I would have been like, okay.
Yeah. To me, if you get, I think you get Joe Jackson up there a little bit higher. Like this draft starts to make a little bit more sense. I like their day three a lot more than their day two in terms of I think they reached a little bit on Hill, reached a little bit on McGovern. I get improving the guard spot. I'm not positive McGovern's good enough to beat out Xavier Suofilo. Like, I don't know if this player, I think you might have two middling guys. That's a tricky spot to be in because when one of them is playing poorly, you're going to try to get the other one in. You're going to ruin continuity. Like, I'm glad that they're investing heavily in the offensive line. It's the Cowboy way. I just don't know how pro ready McGovern is right now. Like, he's got balance problems that are really hard to ignore.
He got balance problems, bro. I did the Cowboys draft write-up, and in it, I think I gave them like a C-plus or something because I like the Tristan Hill pick, but I didn't really like anything else. And I mainly was like, yeah, I don't get the two Miami guys. Like, I don't like Joe Jackson. I don't like Mike Jackson. Like, I don't really like those dudes.
What's it like to be a heretic?
It comes with good hair, so.
Okay, I'm upset about that. I'm going to recover.
You like Joe Jackson?
Yeah.
Michael Jackson? Which one?
I like them both. I like them both for what they are, right? Which Michael Jackson is, I think, like a really good.
Not good?
I think he's a really good depth guy to have in a cover three scheme, which Chris Broussard's going to get him up on the line. Chris Broussard's going to let him use his length, and then he's going to just handle a vertical third. You don't want Jackson having to change direction a ton. You want him to be playing in the vertical plane, and that's what you're going to be able to get when you're running cover three. Obviously, the Cowboys run a lot of cover one, and I get that. But Jackson, as a press bail guy, makes a lot of sense. In the fifth round, I think you've got a guy who can be depth for you, and especially if you're dealing with injury, he can step into the outside, and he's a high character guy. Joe Jackson, Another guy who I think is probably better off his depth early, but there is a bit of a ceiling here. Jackson's a player who wins with explosiveness. He wins with that on the outside, on the high side rush. He can dip his shoulder a little bit, but he's not going to be nearly as productive doing that at the NFL level because tackles are going to be bigger, longer, faster. And so you need to see from Joe Jackson over his young, you know, first couple years, more development on his inside counters, more development on being able to work, you know, a two-way go, work a bull rush. He's got to bring more to his game because how he won at the level, at the college level, isn't going to translate cleanly. That being said, high floor guy, going to be able to give you good outside pushing of the pocket as a depth flyer, as a, you know, on your second team of rushers, and he's a good run defender.
Yeah.
He's a good run defender.
Fine.
So
maybe I got to keep in mind that these are day three picks. I don't know.
Guys for me, and they both went round five. And so to me, like, these are both good selections to round out your depth chart.
I love the Mike Weber pick, actually.
I know you're a Mike Weber guy, yeah.
I'm a big Mike Weber guy. I think Mike Weber and Tristan Hill are my favorite picks of this class. My overall favorite draft classes, okay? We got Dwayne Haskins at the top, Montez Sweat at the end of the first round, Terry McLaurin. We got Kelvin Harmon, Jimmy Moreland in the day three. Like, all 3 days, I thought they made picks where I went, yes, I love these selections. I mean, for them to and maybe we will spend a podcast really just diving deep into this. But the fact that they stayed at 15,
yep,
and picked a quarterback is – it just opens up a lot of conversations because it's like, wow, on one hand – you navigated the draft very well to not have to move up for who could be a potential franchise quarterback for you. And on the other hand, you go, damn, did y'all just get lucky and that he fell to you at 15? Like, basically, it's the, are you a genius or are you just straight up lucky? Which one is it? And how Dwayne Haskins pans out isn't even going to be the answer to that question. The question really, it's not going to be able to be answered because I think it has to do with, you would have to know what was on the backside of their draft process, knowing the intel of the rest of the teams, knowing whether the teams thought about Dwayne Haskins, knowing even what you thought about Dwayne Haskins, because it feels like it's one or the other. Either you're a genius letting him fall to 15 and you grabbing him, or you took an unnecessary risk you probably shouldn't have taken letting him last that long. And so Dwayne going 15 has a huge kind of multi-layered conversation that could go all into it. But what do you think about Haskins landing in Washington and that quarterback situation and potentially being a guy that, I mean, let's face it, do you think Dwayne's going to start week one?
I would expect him to. If you draft a guy top half of round one, and everybody and their mother knows Case Keenum was a lame duck when he came in. Like, no, Keenum, when he came in, was like, all right, the Alex Smith thing happened, so we got – you know, a guy who can hold things down if we need him to. But nobody thought, like, oh, shoot, Case Keenum, here we go. You know what I mean? So I think that Haskins is going to be the guy everybody wants to start. If he is awful in camp, which I don't anticipate, because he's a polished guy, then he won't start. But I think he will. I think he'll fight for week one for sure. I love what you say about the genius or an idiot thing, right? Because it's always so important to remember, like, we run one NFL draft, and then we're done. And so it reminds me of, like, the mock draft machine, right? Like, if we had Haskins dropping to 15 to the Redskins, how many people would hit us up? Like, this is never going to happen. Haskins never going to drop 15. Redskins, somebody's going to trade up to go get him. The Redskins are going to draft him in the top 10. Somebody's going to go get him. Well, in this one iteration of the NFL draft, which happened to be, like, the actual one, Haskins fell at 15 at the Redskins. And that's the thing. Like, sometimes really genius / really stupid things happen. And there's nothing, you know, we can do to predict these things. Haskins falling to 15 is huge. Not trading up for Haskins is what allows the Redskins to then move capital to trade up to get Montez Sweat. Yes. And that's what's great. It's like I would imagine they were willing to trade up for Haskins. But because they didn't have to, they then can use that capital to go get Montez Sweat. So basically, like, you just package these two picks together and you say, listen, the Redskins traded up into round one. They got their franchise quarterback, and they also got one of the best edge rushers in the class, a potential, you know, 8 to 10 sack edge rush guy, 10 plus sack edge rush guy, which if you just look at it, that package doesn't really matter who they traded up for. That's a great opening draft. You know what I mean? That absolutely kills it. And so Haskins, I think, good fit for the West Coast offense, good fit for Jay Gruden. I think it's going to go well for him. as a one-year starter, I do think Haskins is one of those players who will benefit from playing in year one in the NFL, even if he's not very good, which I anticipate him to struggle early, because I just think he needs experience. I really just think he needs reps. It's your job as a offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, head coach to figure out the best way for him to develop. My gut says for Haskins, it's playing him even if it's rough.
And I really do like the round three pick when they started off with Terry McLaurin as well, because if there's an area of Haskins' game that I still think needs a leap in development, it's truly deep ball accuracy consistently. You know, people watch a lot of the highlights of the big time throws that he made at Ohio State, but like, you can watch highlight reels of it and go, wow, this guy's so accurate deep down the field. You watch full game tape of it and you realize that a lot of those connections are few and far between. So like, this guy clearly just needs a lot more help in consistency with his deep ball accuracy. I think his arm is fine. I think he can get it there, but I just don't think the timing was there. Even within what he was trying to do. And so they go and select the guy who is a big time deep threat receiver at Ohio State while he was there in Terry McLaurin. I think that'll be really nice for him to have that similar chemistry, being able to go in and sure. have a guy that he can lean on to and just kind of, again, get his feet wet, get comfortable is my thing. So you really don't start to develop until a guy can get comfortable. And I think they did a really good job of picking a guy who could be a comfort piece for Haskins. And then in the late rounds too, Kelvin Harmon, man, let's just touch on this a little bit. Right. How did Kelvin Harmon, like, I get that he's not fast, but you can't sit here and tell me and watch Kelvin Harmon's tape over the last two full seasons at NC State and go, yeah, that guy's not going to win in the NFL. Yeah. Like, if you say, hey, he's slow, he can't separate, I'll go, okay, he still comes down with the ball. Like, he still was one of the best receivers in college football, even without separating. It's not like he won with separation in college, then ran really slow, and now you have to take that skill away from it. No. Harmon didn't even really separate well at all in college, which means you can't get less than zero, right? If you can't separate in college, it's not like you can separate like negative distance in the NFL when the game gets faster. No. It's just that, okay, he's still not going to be able to separate well. His tape is littered with him succeeding without separating. And I think it really scares NFL teams when you can't – or I think it really scares people in general, scouts, whether it's, you know, they're working in the NFL or just, you know, online doing scouting like we do. When you can't – separation is the easiest thing. It's so easy to look at Julian Edelman and go, oh yeah, that guy wins in this area. He's going to be a good receiver. It's so easy to look at Andy Isabella and say that. Hunter Renfro, Adam Humphries, whatever. When these guys can win with quick, short area quickness, it's so easy to see their success because you can visualize it right there. Right. It's when guys don't win with separation, for example, like a Kelvin Harmon, I feel like people have a tendency to write them off and just be like, oh, they're not going to succeed in the NFL. No. He didn't already do that in college, and he knows how to make up for it. He's strong at the catch point. He can extend his body. He can get up and go get it. He's really strong after the catch as well. Like, all of these things are very true and would have made him a great receiver. I mean, I don't want to say that he's Anquan Boldin, but like, Anquan Boldin was the exact same way, and Anquan Boldin had an awesome NFL career, okay? Not saying that he's going to necessarily 100% be Boldin, but I'm saying that there is a method to him having success, and I feel like him getting picked in the sixth round was clearly a product of somebody not trusting this guy way beyond the talent of what we actually saw on tape, which is just – it baffled me that he lasted that long.
Yeah, and I imagine like we can call this syndrome like the Laquon Treadwell fear. Like that's just like, what
true,
it is.
It's true, sure.
Yeah. Like in terms of like, you know, there's always swings in that way, like in that mold. Like that's the, you know, what we always see from the NFL is like – They swing towards the hottest trend and they swing away from like the most easily memorable misses. Right. I love what you say about it's not like Harmon went to the combine and did anything worse than we expected him to do, which to me means that like the NFL was always just way lower on his tape than guys in the media like you and I were. But you know, he ran 4.6 flat, jumped 32.5, 117 in the broad. You know, he ran like a 4.3-2-3 cone, 7.15 short shot. Like these are not good numbers, but I don't think anybody thought the 6'2", 220 dude who didn't have much quickness on tape was going to, you know, blow out the combine. So it's not like, you know, like I don't think it's a double counting issue, right? I think that there's never a love for Harmon's tape. An interesting thing that I love to think about is this. Pretty much once we get out of the first five receivers selected. Random number. I don't know if that's real or not. Once we get out of the first five, really, like, we get away from those elite Hollywood Brown, Paris Campbell sort of athletes in terms of quickness, explosiveness. DK Metcalf's another one. Every single wide receiver that gets picked isn't going to separate as easily at the NFL level as they did at the college level. Because the NFL level is bigger, faster, stronger, right? We know this. Like, the corner's going to be longer. They're going to be more aggressive, better recognition. They're going to be more physical. They're going to have better recovery quickness. It's going to be harder for you to separate. So if I'm looking for a guy who can contribute in year one, how about the guy who has clear experience and success winning when he's not able to generate massive throwing windows, right? You know, like if I want a guy who's going to be NFL ready to help me in year one, it's going to be the guy who's comfortable and used to dealing with this amount of contact and this amount of pressure at the catch point and this suffocated space, and that is Harmon. So Harmon might have a really nice year one floor, even if he doesn't have the year three ceiling that some of the guys drafted before him does, because he's used to playing with the degree, with the tight spaces that he's going to be afforded at the NFL level because of how he won in college. It's important to note that separation doesn't always mean, like, here I am, there's the corner over there, he couldn't even touch me if he tried. That's that easy Julian Edelman separation you're talking about. But separation only interests me in that it generates throwing windows. I only care if you can get away from a corner if it means you're getting where you belong, when you belong, ready to catch the football. And while Kevin Harmon can't get away from corners easily with quickness, he can outbody them with size, with great hand technique, with good releases and route running, to the point where he can generate throwing windows. And then we know he wins in contested situations. So while he doesn't separate and that he and the corner are separate from each other, he generates throwing windows. And in a quick timing-based offense, West Coast offense here being not the perfect fit, but a potentially good fit, in a quick timing-based offense, that can be very, very valuable. Working across the middle of the field, generating a quick window, and being able to win through contact, that's a stick mover. That's a possession receiver. You know, you brought up Anquan Boldin. That's the exemplar, right? He's the prototype. And there are a lot of guys who are in Bolden's mold who weren't as successful as Boldin, but for a sixth-round pick, if you can get a stick mover, a wide receiver two, wide receiver three, a guy who's consistent in the middle of the field, then can give you contested back shoulder catches, huge value. And that's what I think Harmon can be at his floor at the NFL level.
All right, Philly. We got to wrap up with Philly really quick. I mean, you're the Philly dude. Andre Dillard, they end up getting Andre Dillard at 22 when they traded up from 25 to 22. Thought it was going to be for Marquise Brown. I think you did too, right, on draft night? I think.
I was told the trade-up was happening by a guy. I was told it was for Marquise Brown, and so I tweeted that, and then I followed it up with, but they just traded up in front of Houston, and Dillard's still there, so I think it's for a tackle, and it was for a tackle.
Got goofed. It's fine. Happens all the time on draft night. Things are so bang-bang, and you're going so fast that people are trying to get scoops, all that kind of stuff. I mean, a lot of people thought it was going to be for Marquise Brown, but they end up getting Andre Dillard, which, I mean, even with me not being the biggest fan of Dillard, I like Dillard going to Philly specifically, and I also don't like the idea of Marquise Brown going in the first round, so I'd actually like the Dillard pick better. Miles Sanders in the second round. I know you're not a big Miles Sanders fan, right? Okay, so, and then, of course, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Hello!
Our boy. Let's talk about all three. Give me some rapid fire on all three guys, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, so it's important to not conflate loving the fit with loving the pick. So, like, I love the Dillard fit in Philadelphia, but what I would have loved more is, like, Cody Ford, because I just think he's a better player.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, we see, like, oh, like, one of the best picks in the first round. But it's one of the best picks in the first round for Dillard, not for Philly. Like, for Dillard, it's great. His path to being successful ballooned. It widened when he was picked by Philadelphia because Jeff Stoutland is a developmental guy, as a developmental coach, because of the year that he doesn't have to start, because of Jason Peters and Lane Johnson, and because of the leadership he's going to get from those two guys, the education he's going to get from those two guys. But that being said, I think the Eagles could have just picked an objectively better player who's more NFL ready and is a safer bet in the Cody Ford or Juwan Taylor. So I don't love it. And I think that we're getting too excited about it because it's good for Dillard. Whereas we really, like, you know, as draft analysts, we can obviously be excited for Dillard. But what we should look at is if it's good for the team, because that's obviously the goal of drafting, good for the team.
Right.
Miles Sanders. The Eagles have Jordan Howard for one year. And so, again, go ahead.
Call him bad. Do it.
He's not bad.
You're wrong.
Okay, good talk. That's a good point. The Eagles have Jordan Howard for a year, so again, it's like Dillard and Peters. Sanders is not going to get the lion's share of the touches in year one, and even in Doug Peterson's tenure in Philadelphia, they have always gone running back by committee. Even when they had Jay Ajayi, right, who was playing very well for them, they're running back by committee. So Sanders is going to be, like, to me, a 13 touch a game, 10 touch a game sort of guy, like in that range, low teens. In year one. Now, in year two, he could go and, like, you know, force them out of a committee, but I don't anticipate that happening. It's not the way they like to do it. Sanders is a guy who needs time and he needs experience because he was only a one-year starter and because a lot of his pass protection is weak, his route tree is very limited, he has drops, fumbles, and ball security issues. And even in the open field, a lot of times he's more instinctive than he is decisive, and he's more feeling it than he is reading it, and that can put him into bad situations. So he's going to get specific concepts for Philadelphia. He's going to get a lot of outside zone, and he's going to get a lot of pass-catching stuff in space, easy stuff early, and then hopefully develop into more. But the Eagles spent 53 on a running back, which is not very Howie-esque. It was more of a Joe Douglas pick, and it's on a guy who I think needs time to develop, and so it's not a huge early return. And then our Sega Whiteside. Like we talked about with Calvin Harmon, not going to separate with quickness, but leverage, body positioning, strength, route running, footwork. He has it all to generate throwing windows super consistently in the middle of the field, in contested situations, very, very quickly. His ability in those areas are so, so, so exciting for Philly because of the amount of RPOs they run over the middle of the field. Our Arcega Whiteside as a big slot receiver, going to be able to big boy nickels, big boy safeties, make quick catches. He's incredibly clutch on third downs, fourth down, and the same thing applies in the red zone, something that you brought up on the stream. He's such a good situational clutch player, so he's not going to be a high-volume guy. Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey are absolutely above him in terms of targets. DeSean Jackson probably is as well. But when he's used in matchup situations against smaller corners in those quick-hitting RPO areas, I mean, he's going to be a very, very, very high catch percentage sort of a guy. Going to be, again, not a huge big play threat for them, but in terms of his ability in the RPO game and in the red zone to just win in tight windows is so, so, so exciting at the pro level. And so I love the Arcega Whiteside picks. I love the player. Dillard makes sense. Would have preferred some others, but I like that they went offensive tackle. Sanders, I'm kind of shrugging on this one. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
You idiots.
It's a good point.
Let the Philadelphia Eagles get Ertz, Goddard, Jeffrey, and Arcega Whiteside.
Everybody is 6'3 or taller.
And everybody else in the league is an idiot for it. I'm so excited to watch the Monstars that is the Philadelphia Eagles in short yardage and red zone situations. That's going to be a lot of fun. Everybody knows my thoughts on Arcega Whiteside at this point. I think he's a stud. I think he's the next Marquise Colson. It's going to be fun having him and Wentz in Philly with the rest of that offense. That is it for the NFC East. We will have another NFC.
Very smart to not let me talk about Clayton Thorson on the podcast.
Listen, I was trying to let you off the hook, man. I was just trying to let you off the hook.
I appreciate it.
I'm sparing your mentions as much as I possibly can. So today was a jam-packed episode. Tomorrow's is going to be even better as we go on to the next NFC team. So until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked on NFL Draft.